McChesney is next.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters Today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here on WILL AM 580. Today, we're going to be talking to three longtime activists in the local media scene here, aggressively working in local community radio, with the Independent Media Center, and now with the upcoming low-power radio station in Urbana. Join me today with Mike Lehman, Paul Rismondel, and Sandra Otten here on Media Matters. But first, let's go to Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
Volunteers and friends of community television dodged a bullet at the FCC this month when commission staff rejected a proposal from the cable industry to kill off local control of cable franchise agreements. For the last 4 years, cable TV's trade lobby has been pushing a plan to deregulate cable systems in 41 states, calling local oversight unnecessary due to competition from satellite broadcast services. Had the FCC taken local control away, it would have most likely sounded the death knell for public access TV channels. Even so, cable companies are pushing state by state now to free themselves of the requirement to set aside a few channels for community, school, and government use. On February 15th, supporters of public access TV in Arizona rallied at the state capitol in Phoenix, where Jerry Dobbs of Access Phoenix says two bills are pending that would weaken local control of cable systems.
There will only be two channels negotiated with any city, and those two channels are government and, of course, education. But that means there's no room for us.
Meantime, phone companies are feverishly working to develop their own TV distribution technology now that cable companies have begun offering phone service. SBC, the largest phone company in the country, has launched tests of video over IP technology in select markets and wants to roll it out nationwide by November. And Verizon, which just gobbled up MCI in a $6 billion acquisition this month, is also developing an IPTV plan.
If you're looking for news about politics, you won't find it on television. That's the headline from a study conducted by the Norman Lear Center Local News Archive at the University of Southern California. Researchers sampled local TV newscasts from 44 markets around the country during the November election cycle and found that, on average, local TV newscasts spent 3 minutes on election stories. Martin Kaplan, director of the Lear Center, says the vast majority of that time focused on the presidential race.
Local news doesn't cover local politics. In 2004, what we found was that the presidential race sucked all the media oxygen out of the room.
Viewers got about 75 seconds of non-presidential election stories from a typical local TV newscast. Political advertising dwarfed actual news coverage, what with more than $1.6 billion spent on campaign spots at the local level alone.
There were Senate races that were considered likely or leaning, where the ratio of ads to news was 17 to 1. House races across the board, the average ratio was about 5 in ads to 1 of news.
Another surprising finding was that coverage of Iraq and U.S. foreign policy in general occupied a scant 38 seconds in an average newscast. Kaplan says viewers don't have to accept substandard coverage. The key is to let TV newsrooms know that you care.
Almost on a daily basis, send an email to the general manager or the news director. Give them a phone call. Believe it or not, 4 or 5 phone calls in one media market after a story can constitute a blizzard for a station. Just a handful of reactions can make people think twice about whether what they're doing is good enough or encouraging them to do more of it.
The typical newscast was heavily weighted towards sports, weather, and crime, although advertising took up the largest block of time, nearly 9 minutes worth.
Just how deep does this rabbit hole go? First it was video news releases, then payola pundits, now the exposure of a fake news reporter working for a fake news organization planted in the White House press pool with the active assistance of the White House security staff. That's why earlier this month, the Stop Government Propaganda Act was introduced in the Senate. While members of the House of Representatives are shopping around a bill that would restore the fairness doctrine to broadcasting, a House Media Reform Caucus is also in the works. Meanwhile, the Dish Network just added the Pentagon Channel to its lineup. That's the direct news feed fed to United States military forces around the globe. It's got the potential to be a hit, especially with the kids these days. A recently released survey of students from more than 500 high schools around the country reports 1 in 3 think the First Amendment is overbroad for the times, and 3 in 4 believe burning the flag is already against the law. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here on WILL AM 580 in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Coming to you on Sunday, February 19th, I think it is, 2005. And we're doing a special show today, one we try to do every 6 months a year, talking to people active in the local media community in Champaign and Urbana. And we've brought in a stellar posse of folks to discuss the situation locally and what's being done. People, I think, familiar to many of you who listen to the program on a regular basis. Joining me here in the studio is Mike Lehman, Paul Rismandel, and Sandra Otten. Mike Lehman is a longtime community resident currently pursuing a doctorate in history. Oh, yes. Is that right, Mike? What area of history?
I do Cold War history.
U.S. history?
U.S. history.
How far along are you?
I'm in my second year of coursework, so probably another 3 or 4 years at least.
87 years. No,
yeah,
I shouldn't say
like that.
Yeah, but Paul, we won't go there.
No.
And Mike's been active in the Central America Solidarity Movement and has been a strong interest in media growing out of his activism, and that is in the 80s. Founding member of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. And now active in the forming of the new low-power radio station, Radio Free Urbana, WRFU.
Yes, sir.
Which we will be talking about in the show today. Let me introduce our next to Mike, for those of you keeping score at home, on his right. Sandra Otten, producer of IMC Radio News for over 3 years, and this is a weekly show that the IMC produces that airs on WEFT, the local community station.
It airs on WEFT. It's about to start airing. Actually started last week on UPTV, and it's airs on a low-power station in Macomb, Illinois, and
You're going to have coffee mugs next.
Yeah, you never know.
This is very impressive, yes. And you've been active at WEFT for more than 10 years. No, that's like your Paul's thing. I'm sorry.
About 7 years, anyway.
7 years. And active in a lot of issues, a regular contributor to the Public Eye, and used to write for The Octopus.
I did.
In its glory days.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting to Sandra's right is Paul Rismandel, an old friend of mine, connected to the same department I am at the University, the Institute of Communications Research. Paul's been active at WEFT for more than 10 years. And how long has your show been on there, Paul?
My show is will have been on, I guess, 3 years.
And Media Geek, it's Fridays at 5:30.
Yeah. On WFT.
And one of the top shows over there, competing with many for that honor, I must hasten to add, so I don't get anyone in any hot water. And Paul's a co-founder, too, of the Indy Media Center.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. And as I said, a doctoral student at the ICR, hard at work as we speak on completing his degree requirements. Thank you all very much for joining me today. This show, I should add, for listeners who are just tuning in, is pre-recorded. We did it a few days before going on air because I'm going to be out of town. When you're listening to this, I'll be up in Madison, Wisconsin. So please do not try to call in. We've got 3 veteran radio yakkers in here with me. So I think between the 4 of us, we will not leave too many empty spots for callers to join in. So to sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Let's start with you, Mike, and talk a little bit about the Indy Media Center. I think most of our listeners are familiar with it. We've done shows on it in the past, but I suspect there are some listeners who have heard this term Indy Media Center, Independent Media Center, and know that they've got a big one here in Urbana, but don't know anything about it otherwise. So if someone has never heard of it, how would you explain Indy Media Center and then specifically the one here in Urbana?
Well, independent media started in 1999 at Seattle protest against the World Trade Organization, and activists then thought, hey, we need a way to tell our side of the story, to get our story out. The dominant media oftentimes sets agendas that really have little to do with what's happening in the streets. The local IMC was founded the next year, 2000, by a number of local activists. What we want to do is put media into the hands of people. That's our goal. RFU is going to be one thing. It's the latest thing, but we've got a website, www.ucimc.org, where people can post their own media. They can make their own media. We also have a number of other projects, The Public Eye, which is available at many places around town. And as you mentioned, Sandra is a regular writer there. I've had a thing or two in there, and we invite people to come in.
Yeah, I've been in there too.
Yeah, that's right. you can be in fine company by getting with the Independent Media Center. I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of level you're at, whether you're just somebody that's never written anything before. You can come in, you can post to the website, participate in radio.
What's the press run for The Public Eye nowadays?
Sandra might know that better than I.
Is it around 6,000?
It's 5,000 or 6,000.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And it runs on, Sandra, it runs on donations, is that it? Or?
Right. There are contributing sustainers, so that's primarily how it runs.
And the bills are getting paid, though.
They are. Well, you know, it's not horribly expensive to produce a small newspaper like that, just the printing cost if you're doing it all with volunteers. So that's how it's done. So just keep the expenses low so that we can keep the integrity there.
And people who might want to find out about The Public Eye to see a copy of it, it's available in a lot of stores and restaurants in the Champaign County.
You know,
area.
A sure place you can always get it is Strawberry Fields, because it's easiest for us to stock there
when
they run out.
So you're only like a block
and
away.
That's right. So if you want to be sure and get a copy, you can go to Strawberry Fields. But it's in a lot of coffee shops and libraries around town.
Yeah, we should give the address. It's 218 West Main.
This is the IMC. Right in the heart of downtown Urbana, for those familiar with it, just a half a block away from Ground Zero of Urbana. so you're right in the middle of everything there. How many people participate in the IMC, Mike, in Urbana?
Tell you the truth, it's a little bit hard to estimate. Our mailing list has 150, 200 people on it. We have a number of different groups, people that are interested in participating. There's a link at the top of the website. It says volunteer. And there you can get connected with any of the groups by email. We have numerous email lists. We regularly have functions where we have no more than 49 people due to zoning regulations in our current space. but I would say that We reach hundreds of people in terms of their active participation.
I would say there's always at least 100 people active in the IMC.
Yeah. That's pretty mind-boggling, actually, considering the size of the community. You know, I think we've talked a lot about structures and stuff. This might be putting people under, unless they're really into this like I am. Let's talk for a second about some of the content of what the IMC does, because I think that's where it gets really interesting, the sort of stories that are going. What sort of stories would the IMC website have or The Public Eye have? And Paul, you can jump in here because it would apply to WEFT just as much, that you aren't going to find in the rest of the news media, probably in the area, certainly say the News Gazette.
I'll jump in with that one, just because it actually brings to light one of the interesting things that happen when you're reporting on a story and then you find yourself wanting to be involved in it, that you can be involved in it when you're doing independent media. So I've been following different criminal justice issues around town for because I'm doing the IMC radio news and I'm interviewing people about it. And I make a note that we've had three deaths in custody in our county jail in the last 6 months. And I read about
what's the population of the county jail, roughly?
280.
So is that standard in county jails around the country?
We have
lose 1% every few months?
No, it's not. Actually, according to the statistics that I can find, that there should be 8 or 9 suicides in all county jails in the state of Illinois in 1 year.
Three suicides.
Yeah. They are alleged suicides, and they have been, a couple of them been. Anyway, that's the story. Is the I could talk about that for a long time, but how it relates to independent media. So we see a blip about it that there's three suicides and. And never any outrage over it, never any follow-up stories, never any questioning of the sheriff, why, how is this happening, et cetera, et cetera. And I wrote the story. I did some interviews. I interviewed the sheriff. I posted it on the website. And it does become one of the difficult things is like how involved then do you get in the activism, in the actual changing of the climate of the community, not just, you know, being the journalist, but actually it all gets intertwined. So it's a very fluid thing. But that is one of the things that, like a story that we're working on now that Indeed has changed a lot of things. There are several things that have changed because of it. Visitation policies at the county jail have changed because of it. The inmate jail phone contract where the county's getting $14,000 a month kickback. This is all related because it's all due to the climate of the mental health at the jail mm-hmm. that might have led to it. And then also they're having a climate study of the jail. And last thing we're pushing for, or people are pushing for, is for there to be an outside investigation of the suicides at the jail, a true outside investigation. They're having the local city police do the investigation currently. But I mean, it's one of the reasons it's happening is because we had the mouthpiece to be able to make the story public.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is Sandra, if I can ask you, how have the other media prior to the IMC News getting out of the story in the public eye and the IMC and WEFT, to the extent it's been supportive, how is the story being treated by the News Gazette and the local television news and the local commercial radio?
Just very matter-of-factly. Just like one article on the third suicide.
Any investigative digging to get to the bottom of it?
None.
So basically, this story wouldn't exist without the efforts of the
IMC. I went to the press conference that the sheriff held yesterday where they actually came forth with the fact that they are admitting some fault in the third death, and that is that they didn't check the cells often enough, that they weren't complying with their own regulations mm-hmm. with checking the cells. I honestly don't think that that they would have even come forth with that. They would not have investigated enough had we not been applying pressure. And when I say we, it bleeds over into other people who've got involved because of the media mm-hmm. attention that we've given it. But it did spur from the story coming forth. And then there's been a lot of talk on it of WEFT on some of the African-American preacher shows.
In public affairs shows, yeah.
Public affairs shows. Mm-hmm.
So there's getting a ripple effect or an echo effect
absolutely.
At WEFT and in the IMC. Is it having any sort of ripple or echo effect at the News Gazette, for example?
Well, yes, it is, actually, very much so. I mean, I was at the press conference yesterday, so I asked the questions. I actually gave the press all the questions they should be asking. I went to the press conference and handed them, these are the questions that you should be asking.
Isn't that what President Bush does at his press conferences?
Yeah.
Well,
I think independent media has a very important role in keeping the rest of the press honest.
It seems clear we've got a situation where it's pushing stories that aren't going to get picked up otherwise.
That's
forcing
right.
them onto the agenda.
Another good example is the taser issue. I think that would have just been mm-hmm. a rubber stamp thing.
You know, first, a lot of our listeners who might not be familiar with this, and we have listeners from out of the
sure.
area. Why don't you give a little
sure.
background
on that, Mike? Well, the Champaign Police Department briefly considered using tasers, obtaining them and having them. And activists, some of them connected to the IMC, some of them in the community.
Some folks might not know what tasers refers to.
Oh, tasers. It's an electronic gun that shocks you, basically.
Stun gun.
It'll knock you right down. And there are some serious issues about whether that could cause a heart attack, other health issues.
The theory is that it's better using that than shooting people with bullets. Is that
well,
yeah,
humane,
that's the claim of the Taser Corporation.
The problem is that they tend to get used a lot more than guns
do,
too.
Yeah, you're going to kill them. So that's right. Zapping people all over the place.
The theory is it's non-lethal, but the fact of the matter is that it has some relationship to deaths in custody.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the issue came up. Public Eye addressed it. I'm sure the radio show issue.
It was definitely on the website.
Yes, it was on the website. I mean, this is something that public got involved in. They came out, they saw something that was being explained to them, and they saw how important it was, and something mm-hmm. got done about it. And they don't have the tasers right now. I think we're probably better off as a community without that.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Media Matters Today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. The voice you just listened to is that of Mike Lehman, longtime community activist, co-founder of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, and very active in the formation of the brand new Radio Free Urbana, WRFU, which will be up and running probably by April if everything goes as scheduled. Or
More like June.
More like June, but you know, who's counting? Also in the studio with us today is Paul Rismandel, who does Media Geek over 5:30 at WFT every week. And has been active with WFT and the Independent Media Center here in Urbana-Champaign for many years, a doctoral student in my home department of the Institute of Communications Research, and Sandra Otten, who you've also been listening to, who has been a producer of the IMC Radio News for the past 3 years and active in the public eye, the publication of the Independent Media Center. Just to remind you, this is a recorded show. We did it a few days before going on air, so please don't try to call in. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Paul Rismandel, you've been active in WEFT. Tell our listeners a little bit about WEFT. There's some who are probably regular listeners and know a lot about it. Mm-hmm. And explain what WEFT is and what's the difference between a community radio station and a public station like WILL?
Well, the difference between a community station and a public station is that a public station is often, I think, a public service station. And the standpoint that it is run essentially for the benefit of the public, sometimes as an independent sort of organization or corporation, and sometimes run by universities such as WILL here. It tends to be professional in that regard, in that there are people hired to do programming, and more the programming comes from sources like National Public Radio. So it tends to be professionally produced national programming. And they are nonprofit, and they are run non-commercially and with the whole point of educating the public. Community radio differs from that in that it tends to be both public service and public access. And so a very large emphasis of community radio is providing not only information and news to the public or entertainment and culture, but also to allow the community to interact itself. So a very strong emphasis is placed on allowing community members to be on the radio themselves.
And what sort of shows are you going to get on WFT that you aren't going to get on a public station?
Well, one of the most popular shows on WEFT is called The Old Timers Show. And it's 3 hours actually on Saturdays of old time country music presented mm-hmm. kind of in the style as it would have been presented on local radio 50 years ago mm-hmm. in the Illinois area, where you get to hear someone who is a veteran of the country music scene in Illinois. It's been on the radio for a long time presenting the old time kind of music that you don't hear in a country station, certainly, and you really don't actually hear on public radio either.
A lot of the show on WEFT is music too, right?
There's a lot of music programming.
Yeah. What's the rough percentage between music shows and public affairs or talk shows?
Well, probably
I'm not going to hold.
Yeah,
you
it's about 70-30. About that. So 70% is about music, and 30% is talk and public affairs programming.
And the music is eclectic; it runs the gamut of
very
pace.
Eclectic. There's some basic. There's a lot of blues. There's a lot of jazz and world music. Those are some of the foundational musics. And that is actually a reflection of the community. For mm-hmm. so many years, the kind of music which you could go see in the clubs and was very popular, you know, to see out and live was jazz and blues and world music. And yet something almost unheard on the FM radio waves, except WILL-FM, I know, carries a little bit of jazz programming.
Yeah.
But aside from that, it was almost unheard of. You mostly just get the rehashed rock about 1,000 different ways.
But you also get Jewish music and Celtic music.
That's right.
And
mm-hmm.
just one time.
And it comes from whoever walks in the door and takes the training and wants to put something on the air.
And no advertisers to speak of?
No. No advertising. It's non-commercial.
Supported by donations and gifts of mm-hmm. listeners, as WILL is increasingly becoming almost entirely supported.
And underwriters.
And that's the similarity in some ways between community radio and public radio, is that they are both supported by the public, by individual donors, and by underwriters. WFT does not accept corporate underwriting. So WFT accepts underwriting from local businesses.
I'm sure corporations are really disappointed.
We're always turning away ADM. But
Public Eye's turned on all its public, all its corporate advertisers, been flooding them too.
But that's a real focus is on local businesses, is support the local community.
I shouldn't
and
be
local
facetious,
culture.
I apologize.
But and that's a big way in which sets WEFT apart. And I think we're very lucky to have a WFT here in Champaign-Urbana because it's been on the air 24 years come this September. Back when you could still get an FM license for a full power station in this area, and it wasn't a matter of going out and trying to buy an existing license for $1 to $7 million, which is the going rate in
makes
this area.
It cost prohibitive, obviously. Let's talk about getting a license for low power radio, Mike Lyman. Where did this come up? Who had this crazy idea, and how is this possible? How come we can get a license all of a sudden for another radio station when it's been impossible?
Well, it's turned out to be not quite all of a sudden. Back in the late 90s, a number of folks were setting up pirate radio stations around the country, and this got to be a challenge.
No, pirate meaning unlicensed.
Pirate meaning unlicensed, yeah. Yeah, they didn't ask the government, and basically they're illegal.
And so these were low power, just for listeners who aren't really on top of this issue. This pretty low power, and they'd go into open spots in the dial and just start broadcasting without anyone's permission.
Mm-hmm.
And they, for the most part, weren't interfering with anyone else because there was a lot of open terrain in the dial.
Okay. Right. Well, what happened was the FCC saw it had a problem. It had basically quit licensing stations of less than 100 watts. And this turned out to be a bit of a legal problem because the public airwaves are the public's, and they were actually withholding access to the public. So what they did was they set up a service in 1999 where it would allow community groups, local groups, to set up radio stations. This drew quite a reaction from commercial broadcasters who saw this as a threat to their near monopoly on the public's airwaves. So what happened was there's a tangled set of circumstances. First, we were allowed to apply for licenses, and in this we were aided by something called the Prometheus Radio Project.
Sure, and we've had Pete Tredish, who's connected with that, on the show as a guest here.
Yeah, well, he came through town and had a seminar, basically, and there were four local community groups that attended the seminar and applied for the licenses originally, and I think there were two religious broadcasters that did back in 2000 when we originally had the opportunity. What happened then was, basically, we had our frequency taken away by action in Congress sponsored by the commercial broadcasters. Eventually, in 2003, we were given a chance to reapply for a different frequency. And at that point, only one of the groups was still interested in doing radio, and that was a group called Socialist Forum. It's a local group that does political activism, I guess you could say. It's not involved in electoral work, but among the things we'd notice is just access to media and being able to talk. We mentioned my work with Central America. I did a lot of that back in the 1980s. It was very difficult to get the message out about what was really going on in Central America. I mean, the thing with the Contras and stuff like that all broke, and people were amazed, you know, this stuff was going on. But we'd been looking into that for a long time, but we couldn't get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what happened is about the time that we originally applied for a license, right after that, the IMC started forming. And what we did was we decided that whoever ended up with a license, because nobody really knew what would happen, it would probably gravitate to the IMC. So what has happened is that Socialist Forum actually has a license. We can't transfer it to anybody because of the current way it's set up. But we've entered a partnership with the IMC to basically be our operating entity for the radio station, because we think that it's a really nice fit. The IMC goes out, it opens up the media to the community. I mean, this thing is not a party organ. It won't be. It'll be what the community and the people who show up want to make it.
We're talking to Mike Lehman, Paul Rismondel, and Sandra Otten today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580. We taped the show a few days before going on air, so please don't try to call in. Just sit back and listen. Lehman, Rismondel, and Otten are all veterans with the local media scene, especially the IMC, the upcoming low-power Radio Free Urbana, and, of course, WEFT, our longstanding and well-established community station at 90.1 on the FM dial. I have to make sure I get that right. Excuse me, Sandra, you're on the programming committee at WFT.
I have been.
You have been. Oh, I see. Past tense. And Paul, you've been on it too. Mm-hmm. Now, is there a political agenda? I mean, if a political conservative, Sean Hannity, moved to Champaign-Urbana and for whatever reason couldn't get on the air and he wanted to come to WFT and do his political show there, Ann Coulter, and they walked into the programming committee and said, we want to do the Sean Hannity and Coulter analysis of politics 2 hours a week. We think your listeners will like it, and there's nothing like it on WFT. Could they get on the air?
Yes, they could.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think one of the questions they'd be asked is, how is what you're going to do going to differ from other things that are on the air in Champaign-Urbana? So we might say, how are you going to differ from Rush Limbaugh and all the programs that are on WDWS, which is the
So basically you're looking at the entire media landscape, and that's a criteria. So so knowing that, Sandra, do they're going to get on?
Well, you know,
you better watch what you say because there might be something showing up at the
that
door.
That is very
next
true.
Week. Yeah.
I should have let Paul speak to that.
Well, it really depends. I mean, because the programming committee is an elected committee.
It is. Mm-hmm.
It's not appointed. So it's elected by the volunteers of the station and the board directors of the station.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there would be a very lively debate. And it would be based upon debate, and it would be a majoritarian decision. People would vote on it within the committee.
But the criteria that you're pointing out is that it's based basically on offering something that isn't available.
That's right.
That's the core criteria.
That's one of the core criteria.
Equate it to music, and I mean, we have people coming in want to do oldies shows, you know, and well, it's just not. They don't play the kind of music I want to listen to when I want to listen to it. Well, do they play it though? And how much does it get played? Well, yeah, there's oldies shows, and there's, you know, only so much space on in the schedule, so you do have to consider that also.
But do you think people at WFT are getting a little concerned about here all of a sudden this Radio Free Urbana is coming on, it's going to muscle into its turf? I mean, let's face it, it's not like there's an enormous pie in Champaign County or East Central Illinois to support.
There is concern about it, I would say.
Well, I one thing I could say is in organizing a station, we want it to add to what's available to the community. We don't want it to take away. So there's two important things in organizing this that we've made important principles. One is that we're going to have very limited fundraising. Our operating expenses, once we're on the air, will probably be maybe a couple hundred bucks a month. Our studio will be at the IMC, so that's taken care of. We'll have a little bit of copyright and things like that and some power bills maybe or something. But basically, we're going to raise the money we need to get the equipment to go on the air. We may have occasional targeted fundraisers for equipment. But in comparison to WFT, which is a full-power station, our needs are just not going to require that kind of money. And besides, I really don't like fundraising myself.
Well, I
don't want to have to do pledge drives. And yet I want to double the amount of airwaves that are available to people.
I think there's concern about it until people realize that there was a certain time frame that this license was available in. And once they realize, oh, we would have, you know, it's not like we could wait until 5 years down the road and then, you know, when WEFT is more established, well, it's as established as it's going
to
be maybe.
Well, will WRFU have a different sound from WFT to the casual listener, or will they sound more or less – will be another community station?
I think it's going to really depend upon whose show it is because, quite frankly, there are DJs or air shifters, as they call them at WEFT, who don't have enough time and they want more time. And they'll come over and they'll bring their skills and maybe put on a show at our station. On the other hand, we're going to have people that are very raw going on the air, and it will probably sound a little rougher. But on the other hand, we also feel that they'll be getting important training that will add to the community radio infrastructure in the community. And those folks might eventually go on and decide to get a show over on WFT or something. One thing is we'll have 168 hours of airtime a week to fill up. So not only will this double the airtime available to the community, but it'll also provide important new opportunities for people to practice and to eventually maybe get, because you have to wait in line over at WFT. Their slots are full.
Yeah, Paul Rissman.
Yeah, I mean, I think that WRFU is going to be an asset to WEFT. Mm-hmm. If we can have, you know, four stations playing essentially classic rock music, and two frequencies which are the simulcast of the same signal, I think we can have two community stations. I think the fortunes of independent media in general, including WAFT, have only improved since the appearance of the Independent Media Center on the scene. And I think WILL and WEFT benefit from one another as well. I think that having yet another voice on a dial is going to end up in bringing more attention to independent media and independent voices in this community. And there's going to be a synergy, I think, and a growth rather than fighting over audience. And it was that fear that killed low power radio in the 1970s, the fear that these little stations were going to steal away all the listeners and all the money from the large stations. And I think that is not going to be borne out. I don't think it is borne out. I think we're going to see a real again, it's just another set of voices. It's going to be a real synergy going on.
One of the things, too, about RFU is volunteers. And volunteers are important to WEFT, too. And they've got a principle over there at WEFT of using live air shifters. We're going to basically say, hey, if we got somebody live, that's fine. And other than that, we're going to automate. So we also don't intend to hurt their pool of volunteers. And there's also one other thing. It's kind of an interesting fact, but because we're low power, we'll only be able to reach Urbana, Champaign, and maybe if you're kind of in the right location because it's flat around here, maybe if you get lucky, Rantoul, but that would be real lucky, okay? So But interestingly enough, that's probably about 75% of the listeners of WEFT.
Sure.
But WEFT reaches a large audience, and we don't want to take away from that audience or their financial base, because that's very important.
How many watts is the station? What's it licensed?
No more than 100 watts, and our antenna will be no higher than 100 feet, although we may initially start off with something lower.
And for sake of comparison, WEFT, how many watts is what?
10 kilowatts.
That's 10,000 for 10,000 people
watts,
unfamiliar with
yes.
that fancy lingo. 10,000 versus 100. And how right. high is the WEFT tower?
I honestly don't know, but it's several hundred feet.
Several hundred feet. Where's the WEFT tower located?
It's actually located in Northwest Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a tower farm out there, and we rent a space on a large tower.
Now, I know back in the days when it was unlicensed or pirate radio, they guys in flatbed trucks driving around dodging the Federales. Are you have to keep a stationary
Yeah. We're like any other licensed station. We've got paperwork we have to fill out. We've got to be in one place. You can get a hold of us if you've got a problem with us. And certainly we hope people show up and volunteer.
Sandra Otten, the IMC Radio News is very unusual to have in a community this size journalists working for a community radio doing local coverage. They're mm-hmm. actually working at it. I mean, you have talk shows like this, but actually are people going out and covering stories. I mean, I don't know if there's any city community this small that actually has that. It's very unusual. I think people are very fortunate in this community to have that. What is it like trying to get a show out when you don't have a budget and you don't have advertising support to produce a weekly show of local journalism?
I would say it is... it provides a show that has varying degrees of quality. that's how it goes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be just so unbelievably informative and well-produced and amazing, and then sometimes it's a rerun of something that happened, you know, that they downloaded and tried to figure out something because somebody didn't show up with the interview they were supposed to do. The really good thing about IMC Radio News is that I would say that there's been maybe 200 people probably have produced IMC Radio News, have been a voice on the program, at least more than 100 anyway. I don't have a count on it, but I know more than 100. A lot of people have been involved in it. And one of the things I really like about it is you can have a very low commitment level with it. You can come in and read headlines, like, I'll write them. You just come in and read them. I need another voice, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas to get a show at WEFT, you basically have to go through air shifter training. You have to make a commitment to propose a show that's going to be on every week or maybe every other week. Now, there are some ways to get in, like to do a collective and maybe not have that weekly commitment. But I think that one of the things that I like trying to achieve with IMC Radio News is that people have more diverse voices because you have people who can have different levels of involvement with it.
And if people want to get involved with IMC Radio News, they just go to the IMC or they go to WEFT and just say, hey, I'm here?
Actually, the IMC. We have a meeting every Tuesday at noon. Mm-hmm. That's when we do our planning meeting. But people say, well, why do you have it at that inconvenient time? Well, because the three people who show up, that's when they could be there. Mm-hmm. But if you want to have it another time, we'll schedule it around you. Mm-hmm. they can call 344-8820. That's the IMC's number in the 217 area code. Or email us at radio@ucimc.org. And actually, for
say that again more slowly. For
okay,
people
I will. radio@ucimc.org.
And let me use this as an opportunity to remind our listeners that if you subscribe to our weekly email list that producer Victor Picard sends out at vpickard@uiuc.edu, Victor will send out all this information in the weekly emails, and you can just click on it. You won't have to write this sort of stuff down.
Right. If someone wanted to do a commentary, all they would have to do is call this number, 217-344-8820, and then they would get voicemail, and they could actually just put it right onto voicemail. We could put it right onto the radio the next week.
Is this a great country or what?
It is. They can, you know, write a headline, something that they saw in the newspaper, and they think it's interesting once you start thinking of yourself as a journalist, how you read the newspaper differently, and you just think, I wonder why they're only telling me this. I have this question. And then you all of a sudden, it takes a little gumption, you know, it takes a little, your heart gets palpitating when you call the first time and ask a question that you think, just who am I to be asking this? But you get used to it, and it's empowering once you do. But most people don't have the guts to do it unless they have some kind of credentials to do it. I have no credentials. And every time somebody asks me, well, who are you with? You know, I mean, I shake a little. I think, are they going to buy this? Are they going to
say IMC Radio News?
I do sometimes. And sometimes I just say I'm a citizen. Sometimes we have little badges that we make up and we can show our press credentials if we want to do it that way. Sometimes I think it's just empowering for the rest of the people who are watching, though, to hear me say I'm just a citizen that is concerned about this, because that's what I am. You know, it's it's fluid. It doesn't have to be this division between journalists. And
yeah, well, once people start making their own journalism or making their own media, as the three of you know very well, it gives you a different perspective on what other people do. You're not just a consumer anymore. You think much more critically about it. Mm-hmm. It's one of the benefits of it.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Media Matters Today on WILL AM 580. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We've got three local media activists, Mike Lehman, Paul Rismondel, Sandra Otten, who've been involved individually and together with WFT, with the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, and with the IMC News, and also with the Public Eye. And soon forthcoming to the media landscape here, Radio Free Urbana, our low-power FM radio station, which will be on air, we hope, in June now. It's been a two-month postponement on the show already. I mean, by the end of the show, it might be August. Let's hope not. We're shooting for June.
No, it can't be August. It has to be June 19th, or no later than.
June 19th. So that's the barn-raising day? Or
Well... frankly, being a grad student, after the middle of May is going to be a lot better for me. Our fundraising actually is going pretty good. We're trying to raise $10,000. That'll buy us the basic equipment we need to get on the air. We're actually within $1,000 or so of that goal right now. So we've got the money to buy the equipment. We've got a kind of figure out how we're going to put up an antenna in a studio. The IMC is actually searching for a new home right now. We're kind of keeping our fingers crossed that that'll be taken care of.
The IMC is moving out of its historic location in downtown Urbana.
Well, we're hoping to find a little bit more commodious location.
Less historic?
Well, maybe, maybe not. We're hoping to have a place, though, where we can have our performance venue reopen. Mm-hmm. That's something that we'd really like to put on WRFU. Can you imagine live music? You got a band? You want to be on the radio? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of our goals, is to have a setup like that. So,
and I assume WRFU will be streamed on the internet at all times.
We'll have to see about the money on that. But yeah, we're hoping.
Does that cost a lot of money to do that?
It depends on your bandwidth.
Rismondel's nodding his head.
It can actually be very expensive. I mean, here at the university, when the bandwidth is sort of paid for, it's not so bad.
I just take it for granted.
To go get commodity internet and pay for streaming can actually be pretty expensive. I mean, maybe you could get 10 streams, 10 simultaneous listeners for an expensive amount of money. But if you want to start getting the hundreds and thousands that WRFU will actually be capable of reaching with its RF signal, with its radio signal. It's fairly expensive, thousands of dollars a month.
Oh, well, I had no idea. I'm interested to hear that. You know, the three of you are interested in a lot of different things in local media, and I know a lot of other people in the community are likewise. Is this a close-knit group of activists and media activists who are doing all this stuff, but it's a relatively small group? I mean, is it... How much impact? I mean, how many is it, like, an isolated? You know what I mean?
No.
You know,
it's really
one of the false
notions about it is that we're all, you know, you think, I wonder if those people have green hair and they're the same people that are, you know, protesting this or that. And when you see we're paunchy and middle aged, and you know, I mean, we had. I think of the people who made IMC Radio News, a school psychologist did a series of interviews for a while. And yet we have, you know, Zoe was interviewed last week and she's a 15-year-old punker. I mean, it is just such a wide variety of people. And we're trying to be more diverse. I mean, that is one of the things we want, is more diversity. But it's let go of your stereotypes when you think about
it. Sure. Well, what about the undergrads at the University of Illinois, which is a dominant force in this community for numerical reasons, among other things? Do many undergrads come over and get involved with IMC or with WEFT, for example?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had University of Illinois undergrads who were part of the founding collective at the IMC.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, they come and take shows at WEFT as well, and they certainly continue to volunteer at the IMC. It's the more adventurous undergrads, for lack of a better way of putting it, the ones who think maybe there's something out, you know, past Lincoln Avenue that's not on Green Street that I might be interested in, who are looking for some alternatives, and, you know, who are willing to go out and do some work you know, outside of the university grounds. But we've seen a lot of very talented people and who've gotten inspired. I've met several students that got so inspired by working at the IMC and working at WEFT. They've gotten into either the radio industry and public radio or other community radio stations elsewhere. One of the founding members of the IMC went on to get his master's degree in journalism out of Berkeley and became a frontline fellow. And they sent him down to Guatemala to do some documentary work, all through his experience and getting inspired at working at the Independent Media Center.
I would say that we try, but we could do better, and we hope to do better at being more diverse. That's for sure, especially with people of color, that just like the rest of this town, there's a division, and that it's something, you know, we want to bridge, but it is difficult. And on that, speaking to that, I do believe there's a new Latino station in town also, that there's
a commercial station?
No, it's a low-power station, 1660 AM. And it's associated with La Casa Cultura Latina. And that brings up another point, too, about diversity. At Radio Free Urbana, one of our objectives is to supply programming to folks in languages other than English. So we know there's a large Latino community in this town. And with the university, there's all sorts of different communities from all sorts of different nations who do not have access to the media in this town. And that's who we're inviting. It's just about everybody, really. All our meetings at the IMC, and I'm pretty sure this is pretty much the case at WEF, most of them, are all open to the public. And we encourage your involvement, no matter who you are, basically.
What are the relations like between WEFT and the IMC and WILL?
Well, I think you would say that they're collegial, would be the word I would use. There are many volunteers who have been involved at both, I know, IMC and at WEFT, and there's been exchange of energies, obviously.
Now, what should you say? I might cut your mic. No.
Radio news from IMC gets played on WEFT and is partially produced at WEFT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know that there are some folks who work at WILL. Who also do programs at some folks who work off air, mostly at WILL, who do programs at WEFT. And there's also, I know there's always been collaboration, cooperation. The WEFT public affairs slot during the day is called the WEFT Courier. And that's because they used to bicycle the tapes from WILL over to WEFT because WILL would help out by taping things off of satellite back in the days before WEFT had its own satellite access. And so there was even collegial relations going back into the 80s. And, you know, and helping out WEFT where they could, rather than seeing WEFT as competition.
Sondra, how about the other media in town? What are the relations like between IMC and WEFT with the News Gazette, for example, or the local commercial radio and TV stations?
Well, they like to pretend like we don't exist for the most part, I think. But interestingly, every once in a while I'll get a call from somebody from the News Gazette who's, I mean, they read our webpage.
Oh, yes.
They read our webpage for leads.
So you know you're always going to have one reader.
I know that they do. So we don't get a lot of, publicity with them, I would say. But we don't get ignored by them either in that way. I mean, I know that they use us. They use us for story ideas.
And you're certainly not competition for commercial support, so they have no reason to fear you in that sense.
No, wouldn't think so. Would have to say that IMC Radio News just started being broadcast on UPTV, Urbana Public Television.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. This is another resource that we have in the area, which is the cable public access channel.
That's right. That's right.
Now, what channel is it if you've got?
Channel 6 on
Channel
Insight
6.
For Urbana and Champaign, right? And it is, I'm not a good spokesperson for it. I don't know that much about it, but I know
it's
that
a pretty
you
exciting
can,
channel.
You can get a show there, and obviously they have room on their schedule.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Lots of room.
That's right. And IMC
it's really
does.
It's an underutilized resource.
Really underutilized.
Yes. Yeah.
We're going to be broadcasting IMC Radio News just with a screen filler kind of thing for
you get a show on there. It's like you're right next to, like, was it CBS's Channel 4?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you're often.
No.
The farm part of the dial. You're right in downtown.
Yeah, even on basic cable.
Even on
basic package.
Yeah, I've got basic cable, and it's right in the middle of things. So if you get a show on there, people, even if they don't want to watch it, just skimming around,
right,
you're going to get a lot of people watching your show.
Well, one of the really wonderful things that happened, Democracy Now! Is aired on WEFT, and then someone got the idea once she started making video, well, why don't we get it aired on UPTV?
Let me interrupt for the sake of listeners who might not be familiar with Democracy Now!
Now.
Explain what that is.
It's It's a news program that's produced at WBAI in New York. It's a Pacifica program. Amy Goodman's the host, and it's just cutting-edge journalism that is just she's a truth teller. That's what I say about her. And I have so much respect for her because she educates me daily, but she really helped form much of my political education, really. You can be politically educated by listening to her show. And so it's an hour-long news program that – when did it start, Paul? It started around a specific issue.
1996.
Yeah, it started during the presidential year, election year of 1996. So it's pushing 10 years now.
Yeah. And so they started making a video stream for it. And a person who was doing the Weft Courier decided this would be a good thing. He was working with the AWARE, anti-war, anti-racism effort. He started – figuring out how to become a member of UPTV and get it on the air. And there was some resistance to it because they wanted just local programming, but they couldn't argue with the fact that they weren't getting local programming yet. Anyway, it's on the air every morning at 7 a.m. now. Democracy Now! Airs then. And we have a video group at the IMC. I think they're at video@ucimc.org. And they have made videos that have been shown on there. And then there's another group of Urbana residents that have banded together to just figure out an easy way to start bringing program content to to UPTV. So there's going to be well, I think it's mostly anti-war kind of videos being aired on there, so I'm not really sure about what the content's going to be. But that is an underutilized resource in the community, and if anybody wants to learn how to make content to go on there, they could do it either through UPTV or through the IMC.
And we try to run trainings in the video group at the IMC on some regular basis. I think we're actually planning some upcoming from March.
Right.
So people could learn some basic video stuff through the IMC.
Just email or just march right into the IMC in downtown Urbana.
Yeah. If you want to meet the video group, it's Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. at 218 West Main Street, downtown Urbana.
Mike Lehman, you have been – you're our, I think, most veteran Champaign-Urbana media person in the room here. At least, not in Champaign or Urbana, but
probably
in this room. You know, as you look at what's happening, I mean, it's pretty striking, considered 10, 15 years ago where things are at and where things are at today in terms of independent media. Where do you think, or where would you like to see this community's media scene be 5, 10 years from now? Where would you like to see us heading toward?
Well, I would like to see all these organizations be a little bit more financially viable. I mean, they're dependent on the community and the community's involvement, just like WILL is. And I think the community should support all these sources of media because they give a variety of different opinions. I mean, sometimes they're typecast, as we've already mentioned, but quite frankly, there's a wide range of opinions on all these outlets. And really, the range of opinion is dependent upon who shows up. So if you think there's something not there, get involved.
But do you think that, would you like to see new TV stations? I mean,
that'd be interesting. That'd be interesting and probably expensive. I mean,
you're sort of the Johnny Appleseed around here with radio stations and indie media centers. What, you got anything else in your bag?
Well, no, but I'm a busy grad student. But I'll tell you, if somebody has an idea, the Independent Media Center would be glad to hear it. And you'd probably find somebody there that's interested in participating. So that's one thing that people should keep in mind. If they have an idea, come on down.
What sort of traffic does the IMC website get? I mean, how much is it used?
The last time I heard it mentioned was somewhere around 2,500 hits a day.
Now that's visits?
Yes.
It is substantial.
That is one. I have a website for another group I work with, so I track this. I'll say that is a very impressive visit total, especially for a community of this size.
Well, in part, it's sort of because we're sort of an interlocking media conglomerate for the community. All these different groups. I mean, for instance, Public Eye stories. Sometimes they start off on the website. Sometimes stories start off in radio news, and then somebody wants to write a larger story for it. Things start at Weft, and people want to participate. So all these things are really synergistic in a way that I think is pretty unique for any community our size.
Senator, people sometimes say, well, what's with this Public Eye? That's so 19th century. century. I mean, yeah, this printed paper, I mean, why not take all the money using that and put it towards, you know, a website or...
Oh, we all know why. You love to sit in a coffee shop and read the paper. You love to snuggle up in your bed and read a book, don't you? Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't think the printed word is ever going to go away myself. But I would say if I would have a dream for a vision of the future, I would like to see a good alternative newspaper back in town. The public eye serves a purpose, and it's quite a grand purpose. But I do believe that this community can support a commercial alternative weekly that has a political edge to it, and that could have really good investigative journalism, which is sorely lacking in this town. There is no reason in the world that I, as an artist and a, you know, just a everyday citizen who hasn't paid one, you know, red penny for it, should be the one doing investigative journalism. And I think it can be supported. I think the problems with the alternative papers before had nothing to do with – they would like to tell you that the paper went out of business. The paper was one of the newspapers in town because it had too much political content that they couldn't get advertisers for it. It was mismanaged. That's why it went out of business, not because they couldn't get advertisers.
Could the public eye be that paper? I mean, it's
well,
there.
No, it couldn't be because they have talked about different – this is the way it would be if it – if that public eye was that paper, it would be a different paper.
Yeah, it wouldn't be. I mean, I think it could be at the IMC, though.
It could be, but it would not be the public eye.
Yeah, it would be a different entity.
There's people who wouldn't work for it. The people who work for it now are not the people who would probably be in the commercial newspaper business.
New York IMC has a newspaper, The Independent, and they run it much more like an alternative weekly. And then during the RNC, they published 100,000 copies or something about like
that.
And
it's a weekly?
I think they are going weekly now, and they do pay some people to do some things. They try to, you know, again,
this
they're trying
impressive.
To build it
up. I like it. Here we are in Urbana-Champaign, and we're talking about doing the same thing. It's a city of 10 million people.
Yeah.
And here we are in Urbana-Champaign. Yeah, they can do it in New York. We can do it in Urbana.
And I think we could. But yeah, I mean, it would require some people who would be able to dedicate the time. I mean, really substantial amounts of time for a little while, probably without getting paid, to build up the fundraising and everything.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, people didn't think we could build an IMC.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying it to cut off anybody's dream of it. I just think that I don't know how it would morph, how it would happen. Who knows about that? But I do think this community needs that. I think they need investigative journalism, and I think it could happen through a good alternative paper.
You know, on one hand, I think the research shows a point you were getting at earlier, Paul, which is that the more nonprofit, non-commercial radio stations there are in a community, the more the audience for all of them grows. It has a positive effect. And Minneapolis, for example, has the most non-commercial radio stations in the dial and has by far the biggest share of the listenership to those stations of any community. And that's a positive thing. But the other side of the coin side we've been talking about, and literally the coin, is that there's a only so much money to go around to support all these media, even if you have a lot of listeners. I mean, they're in a community of this size, there's just so much disposable, contributable wealth. I mean, is there a limit to how much support? Can we get much beyond this in this community? Because it isn't a very large community. It's an awfully impressive array of media for a community this size. I dare say, I doubt there's a single community in this country this size that has anything close to Champaign-Urbana.
Well, I would say this. I think there's a lot of people who have money in this community who aren't doing activist work, who feel in their heart that they want to change things in this world, and how they can do it is through their checkbook. There's a lot of people who want to actually do the legwork, who want to be involved, and then there's a lot of people who are not able to, and because they have more than full-time jobs. And so they do have income. They have to be integrated into this. And I think that's what we're looking at, and looking at tapping that resource in order to help people. It's empowering to be involved at any level, and checkbook activism is really important too.
Yeah, I think we could do it. I mean, it may mean trying to make it more approachable. It means reaching more people who aren't hearing the message and giving them ways that they can contribute that maybe are different from the methods that we're used to, the $40 a year or other methodologies. But I think we can. If you look at all the how much disposable income goes to things like fast food and to beer and to all sorts of other things, I think that a little bit of that chunk could go to the alternative media in this town. It's just a matter of figuring out how to do it.
What's the budget roughly for WEFT?
It's about $125,000.
What is it for the IMC, roughly?
And $30,000-$40,000 a year.
So we're looking at $165,000 between the two of them, roughly. And let's say we add in another 10 or 15 for ancillary other stuff. So they've got 180,000 in this community mm-hmm. being spent on independent. And that's not even including Will, mm-hmm. leaving
right.
Will out of the
right.
equation. I mean, is it realistic, I mean, that we could say 3 years from now that could be $400,000? I mean, we could increase it more than double it. Or because, you know, the skeptics would say, look, that's amazing already. I mean, mm-hmm. you're way beyond the curve for what they could do in Decatur, Illinois, or Springfield, Missouri.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, in the four little over 4 years that the IMC has been in existence, we have steadily grown. I think the community has gotten value from this, like they say on WILL, and just like WILL, I think we'll be growing.
You know, on that note, I just noticed that the band is tuning up. We're near the end of our time here. So if people do want to get involved, the place to go for the Independent Media Center is ucimc.org. Mm-hmm. On the internet, or just go to downtown Urbana. And WFT, of course, downtown Champaign, and easy to locate, 90.1 on the FM dial. And stay tuned for Radio Free Urbana. I'm Bob McChesney, your host. I want to thank Mike Lehman, Paul Rismondel, and Sandra Otten for joining me today on Media Matters. I'll be back 1 week from today with Danny Schechter.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Sangamon Auditorium, UIS Springfield, presenting George Bizet's romantic opera, Carmen, on Friday, February 25th at 8 p.m. The opera tells the tale of Carmen, a dangerous temptress who easily captivates the masses. Ticket information at 800-207-6960.
This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, rain likely with a chance of thunderstorms, warmer with a high in the lower 50s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms this evening, then a slight chance of rain after midnight. The low in the mid-30s with southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour this evening, shifting to the northwest after midnight. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the lower 40s and northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. This is WILL Urbana, listener-supported public radio. It's 2 p.m. Central Time.